Welcome, one and all, as we close out another week here at the Damage Report with me, John Arula, and joining us as always on Fridays, Brett Ehrlich, the host of the Happy Half Hour. How's it going, Brett?
I'm doing so well, John. I turned down my headphones, so I can't really hear you. I don't know why I just noticed that. It's a beautiful day to be around the neighborhood, isn't it, John? How is your Christmas decorations up? What's going on?
No, I haven't done any of that. I do plan to. We didn't get around to Halloween this year because, you know, Raina, but I am planning to finally commit to Christmas lights, which I have not had on the house. So it's a big ordeal. We're going to see. I'll probably end up dying by falling off the roof, but
You're too preoccupied with dying, John. Let it go. You're not only the good. You got to look into, there's these things I want you to have because I feel like you'd appreciate them more than I do. They're little clips that go on your eave.
Yeah.
And they just kind of snap on there and they hold your Christmas lights.
Yeah.
I want you to use them so that you can tell me if they're worth me buying.
What else would you use? Like you do like the Christmas vacation style, like staple gun. Like what else are you doing to hold them up than that?
So AV dork that I am, I use the little like nail and plastic hooks that keep like Ethernet cables against the wall.
That's
like
that's way too much.
I have a giant jar of them that I'm pretty sure secretly replenishes when I don't look at it.
It's a useful thing to have. Magical as well.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I will try that out and see how it works. And hopefully we will both have, well illuminated houses. But anyway, it is, as you previously said, a good day in the neighborhood. I mean, I can't attest to your actual neighborhood, although it is lovely. I mean, like the political neighborhood. There's a lot of interesting news going on. It is not all good news. Many people might have noticed. It was reported that Sandra Day O'Connor, first female Supreme Court justice, has passed at 93.
You spoke at my college graduation.
Really? I'm shocked by that. Obviously, you know, a historic appointment. And of the big political deaths of this week, this one not as demanding of mockery as some of the others, I suppose. And
appointed by Reagan, the first female justice on the Supreme Court, and at the time, one of two Stanford graduates. Let's go, boys.
Of course, he's going to fit in. And I will say, I'm not an expert of Sandra Day O'Connor or whatever, but I will say, could have been worse considering Reagan and all that. But anyway, so that's
we're not the other was Rehnquist. So. Yeah. Not a bunch of winds coming out of NorCal.
That's true. Setting that aside, obviously it's sad. We have a lot of news that we're going to dive into. And we're going to try to fit in as much conversation as we can of the big Gavin Newsom, Ron DeSantis debate, which I found to be very fun. So we're going to dive into that. And along the way, we've got Nikki Haley's first shot against Donald Trump, AOC revealing Nancy Pelosi's condescending insults from early on in her time in the House. Should you, if you're a liberal lefty, consider dating conservative men? Fox News makes the case, and we will be throwing away our garbage people of the week, as always. I'm still looking for Trashy. I don't know where Trashy is, but I have there's Trashy. Okay, I have Trashy. It's going to be Trashy's epic return. Obviously, I looked very hard earlier, but that's a lot to get to. If you have any thoughts about these stories or others, you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, and all that. And you might even get yourself a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So get them in. But with all that said, Brett, are you ready to do this thing?
Whether I am or not, you've been more than fair.
He did it. Let's go.
George Santos coming down the stairs there of the Capitol. Now you hear Manu trying to get to him. And as soon as he gets him, it looks like he isn't saying anything to anyone. He has been talking a heck of a lot before this vote. We are waiting to see if he says anything there. Let's listen in. Nope.
Perfect delivery there. And he's gone. George Santos is out, as that commentator mentioned. He came into our lives talking arguably too much, both from our point of view and I guess in hindsight from his point of view. And he goes out with seemingly not much to say. George Santos has now become the sixth House member in history, American political history, to be expelled in Congress's past. The first, by the way, who had not been convicted of a crime or accused of treason. Hold on that one, because we're not done with this thing yet. But overall, the vote was pretty clear. 311 to 114 with two voting present. You can see there that the Democrats were overwhelmingly in favor of getting rid of him. The Republicans, not as sold on the idea, which means that if you're the Democrats and you want to attack the Republicans as harboring this guy and supporting him, you've just been given a big piece of evidence. More than half voted to keep him. And he on video didn't want to say much. He had a couple of quick comments. And I just want to get to those before we discuss. He's asked by a reporter for his reaction as he left the House floor. And he said, "What reaction? The House voted. That's their vote." He warned they just set a dangerous precedent. Yeah, he cares about the state of the Republic going forward. And asked if he would return to use his House privileges. He said, "No, why would I want to stay here?" Okay, so he's in a snippy mood, I suppose. I guess we can give him a day or two of that. He was just yeeted out of Congress. Brett, what do you make of this?
You know, you got to be a pretty big liar for other politicians to go like, "It's just too much, man." Mm-hmm. You know, when you think back on all the stuff that this guy lied about, he lied about what high school he went to. He lied about what college he went to. He lied about his mother dying in 9/11. He lied about his grandmother dying in the Holocaust. He did a lot of lying. But my issue is, I feel like, what is America anymore if you can't just completely lie your way to the top? This was one of the last places that got by being a developed country and allowing you to completely fabricate everything and fake it until you make it. Like, what the hell? That's all messed up.
That is a little bit messed up. Obviously, you're being a joker, Brett, because you like jokes. But let's briefly acknowledge that he didn't just lie. He also apparently is alleged to have committed a lot of different crimes. And apparently, there's very convincing evidence of a number of those. So it's the lies, but also the wholesale robbery of campaign donations and those sorts of things, and fraud and crimes here in the US, crimes in the Southern Hemisphere. There's a lot of crimes going around as well. And he is going to be, by the way, contending with federal indictments. He was charged in May with wire fraud, unlawful monetary transactions, stealing public funds, lying on federal disclosure forms, a whole lot of stuff. So he's out of Congress. He isn't necessarily out of, you know, being targeted for what he's done. And while we're probably going forward going to have less reason to talk about him on a weekly basis, we still do want to see if he's going to suffer actual criminal consequences for what he's done. So that awaits to be seen.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how it is that he'll be replaced. I can't remember if it's like the governor replaces him or just someone.
Well, I can tell you. So Governor Hochul of New York is expected to call a special election that will likely take place around February. There's a very limited time, like a week and a half before you have to call the special election. And I think it has to happen around 3 months from then. So we are going to have a special election to fill that.
So in the meantime, they'll be down one congressperson in terms of a lead for the Republicans, which is a pretty hilarious, which is like, Matt Gaetz is just like, "I'm not quite sure. A, is he on my side? B, can you just get expelled for allegations these days? Because that doesn't bode well for Matt Gaetz. But in losing Santos, if he wasn't on his side, then it shores up more power for by way of a slimmer margin for Matt Gaetz and his contingent in Congress." That's the political calculus. But Gaetz seemed to be one of the people that were on his side. Personally, I don't think he should have been expelled from Congress. Like, the guy hasn't been convicted of any crimes here in the United States. Plus, like, if he's a senator, it's a different story because senators serve 6-year terms and representatives have a 2-year term. I do think in this situation, until he's convicted of a crime, and while these are just the criminal aspect is just allegations in a town where politicians lie all the time. Yes, his are more egregious and pathetic. But I think that there is like a way for the system as it's set up to just kind of figure this whole thing out. Shut the whole thing down.
I don't necessarily agree, but I respect that approach. This is one of those, I know that my job is to have like super strong opinion about everything that happens. But in this one, I think a case can be made that you boot him. I think a case can be made that you let him be convicted and you beat him in an election, particularly because of the nature of the crimes. Like for me, like people like Marjorie Greene and Paul Gosar, who have very strongly hinted at and supported violence, you know, in our politics. I think allowing them to maintain power, I think, is higher stakes than George Santos might rob his donors more. Like that's a his donors issue rather than Paul Gosar might, you know, tweet a video of, I don't know, Biden being beheaded or something. I mean, he's basically already done that. So yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't mind it. I'm not going to like rant against it, but I don't think it was demanded. I could take it either way.
I do get the like, all right, but I know this one for sure. Like, I'm afraid of the precedent that it sets, that it just like, you know, in a world where it's like Hunter Biden's laptop, that they're just going to try to get rid of the guy. And, you know, with really nothing behind that. We had more in the Trump impeachment. But I do understand the other side's argument, which is like, listen, in most cases, as evidenced by history, we don't just shove people out the door for lying and being accused of crimes. But like this dude, we all know that it like lowers the already largely tarnished brand of the reputation of the House of Representatives, the United States of America.
Yeah. My final point that I'll make on this is that he says that this is a danger. We don't. He says this is a dangerous precedent. I do agree that this potentially affects the future going forward, the likelihood that this will happen again. It just bothers me that there's at least two ways it could do that. In a reasonable world, we could say we're now going to be more vigilant for insane lies and crimes that have good evidence. And we're going to now care about that. But that's not what's going to happen. They're just going to do it like, yeah, it's going to be a Hunter Biden laptop situation. So I agree that we are going to move in a dangerous direction, not because we have to, but just because that's the political system that we have, I think.
Yeah. And in the meantime, I just want to give a shout out to the North Shore Leader, the one local newspaper that called this out before it all went down. While he was running, they're like, I think this guy's a liar. And nobody listened. The Cassandra of newspapers.
There should be a movie made. Like, they cannot get enough credit that everybody missed it. And geez, it's amazing. Anyway, we need to move to much more serious news. We'll see, you know, if there's more out of Santos later on. Maybe we'll talk about it with Francesca on Monday. But for now, let's jump into this. The New York Times has reported that Israeli officials apparently obtained a sort of draft, well-developed version of Hamas's battle plans for the October 7th terrorist attack more than a year before it happened, according to documents, emails, and interviews with officials and analysts. Apparently, Israeli military and intelligence officials dismissed the plan, saying that it was aspirational, fantastical. It's not something they could actually do, although analysts at the time were saying, no, we think that there is a chance for this. And as Hamas continued to run sort of like training simulations, analysts would point to that as saying, this is in line with that plan that we talked about. Something should be done. But obviously nothing was done. And we had one of the most horrific incidents on October 7th that anyone can remember. It was apparently a 40-page document. It's been codenamed Jericho Wall by Israeli authorities. And much of what it described was a part of October 7th. It had a barrage of rockets at the outset of the attack, partially to open up, ways to penetrate barriers, also as a distraction, drones knocking out security cameras and automated machine guns, and then a combination of foot assault, motorcycles, paragliders. All of these things were in the Jericho Wall document. All of these things happened on October 7th. The plan also talked about what the objective of it would be: hostage taking, occupying communities, maybe even multiple communities. And at the time, more than a year ago, the Jericho Wall document was apparently circulated widely among Israeli military and intelligence experts, but they did not believe that it could be done. However, in July, just 3 months before the attacks were actually done, a veteran analyst with Unit 8200, Israel's Signals Intelligence Agency, warned that Hamas had conducted an intense day-long training exercise that appeared similar to what was being outlined in the blueprint, but a colonel in the Gaza division brushed off her concerns, according to emails. And the analyst said, I utterly refute that the scenario is imaginary. The Hamas training exercise fully matched, quote, the content of Jericho Wall. It is a plan designed to start a war. It's not just a raid on a village. And apparently was told, we're just going to be patient. And obviously we know, you know, the horrific consequences of nothing being done in that case. Brett, this is dramatic reporting. What do you make of this?
It's like this is a report and everybody should read it and understand it. And but my favorite are like the takes afterward. Like there's a lot of people's takes that are like, yo, we should like the same people like don't believe Israeli intelligence are like, you know, we should have believed they should have believed Israeli intelligence. Israeli intelligence knows a lot of stuff. What's the counter argument is should they have done a preemptive attack? Then it just feeds into a narrative. But I do believe that Benjamin Netanyahu has been so focused on like horrendous occupation of the West Bank that he just, you know, the narrative that this reinforces is that he just didn't really care enough. I thought he was winning so hard in Gaza that he didn't really think it was that big a deal. Like,
well, hold on for one second. Just to be fair, according to the reporting, there's no indication or confirmation that Benjamin Netanyahu was aware of the Jericho Wall document.
That's why I say it feeds into the narrative. Like, buck stops with him, you know, that and his intelligence apparatus didn't, you know, raise it to his level, and he's in charge of staffing all of that essentially. The administration, his government, as it's called there.
Just to respond to your thing about the Israeli intelligence, though, I would just respond that I think that you can have a view about the public statements of an intelligence agency that doesn't necessarily have to be in line with what you believe that country's military should prepare based on it. Like the CIA should inform our military of things. That doesn't mean I believe everything the CIA says publicly, because that then becomes an avenue for propaganda.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like that's not the takes I've seen that are, they're not that sophisticated. They're just like, it's like the other thing, like people are taking the report that there were deaths on October 7th where the Israeli military killed its own people. And the takes after that are like, Hamas is innocent because that's it, folks. End of story. The Israeli military killed killed its own people on that day. Ignore everything. It's that thing. And for me, it's like I've given my official take. I just gave part of it with Netanyahu, horrendous occupations and settlers in the West Bank is just the worst. And I called for a ceasefire supported the ceasefire days after the attack when the proportions had been kind of commensurate with what typically happens in these situations given history. And but for this, it's just I don't like the takes that are like, you know, when Hamas releases releases a hostage, people are like, look, they hugged afterwards. Hamas is great. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of crazy. Yes. Those are the takes that are just like, what are we doing? So keep it connected. This is one of those things. This is the reason why so many people in Israel are like, listen, there are many people who don't approve of Benjamin Netanyahu more now than ever. Don't support Netanyahu in Israel. There are two essential groups in that opposition to him. One grew as a result of it, but both of them are pretty upset with the fact that he couldn't keep them safe. And there's two different people in that coalition that thinks we should do different things, you know, to keep them safe, you know, in their minds. One is to work toward a peaceful solution, which is the one I endorse. And the other is the people that are like, just go get rid of Gaza, which is something that is terrible and counterproductive and 100% evil.
By the way, as we've previously alluded to on how much actual support there is now and historically for the leadership of Hamas or Benjamin Netanyahu's government, John Oliver did a great breakdown of that several weeks ago. Everyone should definitely check it out. Yes, if it's not already clear, nothing about this reporting means that Hamas is innocent for what they did. From my point of view, that seems crazy. And it's also like when this sort of thing comes out, some of these quotes seem really damning. It is hard to know for sure how many equivalents of the Jericho Wall document are there? I don't know. Like, was this the one big thing that was ignored, or there are 1,000? Like, I don't know. I'm not an Israeli intelligence officer, despite what some conspiracy theories might say. And so it feels like Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. That's what it feels like. It feels like George W. Bush ignoring a document, but it's so hard to say. You know, how much more attention should there have been paid to it? Obviously, the stakes were incredibly high. So many people died as a result of this. But anyway, that this is something that obviously inside of Israel, they're going to want to do a lot of investigation into, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I don't think that most people have those like terrible takes that I said. It's just like, I see them all the time. Sure. And if you see those and you're like, oh, that makes sense. It just, it doesn't, it's counterproductive. It doesn't help your own argument.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take our first break because we have a big story to jump into. Gavin Newsom debated Ron DeSantis, and there's some good stuff there. We're going to break it down after this. I got uncomfortable enough that I missed that transition. Hold on, John looks like he escaped from the movie Oppenheimer. I need to see that. Jordan was telling me yesterday to go see Oppenheimer, so I'm going to work on that. Anyway, we got a lot to get to, everybody. We're going to try to get through as many of these videos as possible, but let's start off with this.
When are you going to drop out and at least give Nikki Haley a shot to take down Donald Trump in this nomination? She laid you out. Please. You're a walking hypocrite.
You're a walking hypocrite.
Oh, God. So Gavin Newsom debated Ron DeSantis. It's a weird thing. A lot of people are wondering why it had to happen, but it did happen. And I'm thankful that it happened for a few reasons. First of all, Gavin Newsom decided to just tear into Ron DeSantis for his flailing campaign. And we're going to get to a few more instances of that in a second. But what made it great wasn't the things that Gavin Newsom would say. It was Ron DeSantis's complete lack of ability to not physically demonstrate how much it bothered him. The weird shaking that you wish. Are you 12? That's your response, you wish? Anyway, let's get to a few more of the hits.
I'm the only guy here that's a border state governor. You're trolling folks and trying to find migrants to play political games, try to get some news and attention so you can out Trump Trump. And by the way, how's that going for you, Ron? You're down 41 points in your own home state. There's one thing in closing that we have in common is neither of us will be the nominee for our party in 2024.
Oh, those are like the debate equivalent of like Ken Klippenstein targeting you on Twitter. It's like that hurts and there's no way to pretend that it doesn't. DeSantis's little like his little smiles and his looks down and his smacking his lips. He knows how bad he is at not looking uncomfortable. He has clearly been told to be better at that. And he just doesn't have it. As with so many things, he doesn't have it. He can't do it. Gavin Newsom must have been drawing so much pleasure from how easy he could get under Ron DeSantis' skin. Brett, what do you think?
You ever see those like, there's like, I don't know, like TikToks where people are like have their sword and they just go like this. And then someone's head falls off. Like that's what it was like. Watching those barbs. And it's like Gavin Newsom is so freed up to do this because Gavin's like, I don't know why this is happening. I challenged you to a debate and you took the debate. You took the debate. And he goes out. I mean, it was very difficult to watch this whole debate because all they did for the first half of it was just shout at each other at the same time while Hannity was like, me. But watching those barbs land and watching DePantis just lose it was fantastic. And I loved it very much.
I love the reference to the anime sword reveal. It's 100% true. And Gavin Newsom, who, by the way, is not my favorite politician. I think there are some promises he made I would have loved for him to actually like come through on as governor of California. But he's doing all of this and making Ron DeSantis look so bad while simultaneously fighting a war on two fronts. Sean Hannity is the moderator, and Sean Hannity was debating Newsom. Newsom had a sword in each hand and was fending them off. You know, his ability to do that, by the way, does not mean that he's an awesome progressive. So we can have a nuanced understanding of what's going on here. But Brett, what are you thinking?
Yeah. What ended up happening was that, Sean Hannity likes Gavin Newsom more than he likes Ron DeSantis. That was so insanely clear. The first thing that Newsom said at the beginning was like, nice to be here with you. Glad you're wearing a tie there, Hannity. And Hannity just like blushed. He was like millions of housewives around America watching that debate, just going like, oh my God, this guy's a hottie patati with a banging body. Like, and then they look at DeSantis and you can tell when they do the side by side that Gavin Newsom's taller just by where the fox stripe is on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. So there was that. It was fantastic. And all around, just he wiped the floor whenever possible, saying things like, I don't know why any of us agreed to do this. You know, and then, yeah, I don't know. Why do you think that DeSantis took this opportunity?
So I will answer that one sec. I will say that, look, obviously, Gavin Newsom, more skilled in a lot of different areas, but he has yet to demonstrate the skill that Ron DeSantis has in walking confidently in 5-inch heels. So I don't know if Gavin Newsom can actually do that. But anyway, yeah, it is a weird thing, admittedly, for the governor of California to debate the governor of Florida, where one of them is running for president and the other isn't, technically. Now, Gavin Newsom was hit by Ron DeSantis a couple times for sort of running a shadow presidential campaign. And I don't think that that is 100% unfair criticism. Gavin Newsom said, I'm not going to be the nominee, but I think that there's like some occasional checking at actuarial tables going on, and being around and ready to go if necessary is probably not something that they haven't talked about. So I think that that's a fair attack. I think that's why this is happening. And also because Gavin Newsom, even if he's not running now, certainly would like to in 4 years. And he knows this is going to give him a lot of good publicity, even from people farther to the left like us on the spectrum than him. So I think that's the reason.
Yeah. And Gavin Newsom is traveling the nation and sending emails to me. I don't know how I got on any of these email lists, but I get emails from Gavin Newsom that say words like Tennessee in the subject title. He's like, I'm in Tennessee right now as governor of California. We're in Tennessee, you know, trying to fight the fight for Biden-Harris, but really he is just building up name recognition. That is what this is all about. That is so valuable going forward. And he's winning that battle when it comes to the next cycle after this one, at the very least.
Super fast, I want a response from you before we move on to the substance of the debate, them talking about issues. If you could press a button right now and Biden drops out, Gavin Newsom replaces it, do you press the button?
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, look, he wouldn't be the person I would pick if I could pick, but if I could just pick that.
He's making free insulin.
That is true. He's done a few things. There's things he has not done, but there's things he has done. Okay, well, let's move on to something else. Ron DeSantis had a couple of tricks up his sleeve, or I guess in his coat, to hit Gavin Newsom with. Here's one.
Ron has literally the worst mental health system in America, forgive me, outside of Mississippi and Texas. And so with all due respect to being lectured on some of these topics, Ron DeSantis is not the one I'm going to be listening
30
to.
30-second response. I'm looking at total time. Governor DeSantis,
This is a map of San Francisco. There's a lot of plots on that. You may be asking, what is that plotting? Well, this is an app where they plot the human feces that are found on the streets of San Francisco.
So first of all, I fact checked that. That's not actually what it is. That was a close-up photo of his shirt after he eats chocolate pudding.
Get up, John. Anyway,
boom.
Get up.
Boom, Ron DeSantis. You're dirty.
Body.
Anyway, so look, they're talking about crime. Is that a good, like, Republicans love to talk about poop on the ground. They love, that's their favorite thing to talk about is poop. Is that an effective attack against Gavin Newsom and those damn libs that there's a bunch of poop and we've got a brown smeared piece of paper? What do you think?
Listen, for every like piece of poop found on the streets of San Francisco, there is a piece of poop found on the streets of Miami. Like there is also for every, you know, per capita anything, there's a Florida man. Like the reputation of Florida is not stellar. The people that Florida is known for, like the migrants to Florida, are very much like New Yorkers, East Coast people that retire and move there because the weather's nice. And yes, because there's no income tax, but you know, the property taxes are higher. The weather is worse than California by a ton. It pours down rain. It's so humid and disgusting. But I don't know if you know this, but in Florida at night, sort of what happens is the iguanas freeze. And when they freeze, because they're cold blooded, they fall out of the tree and onto your face. That is Florida for you. Here we have lizards, but they are very active. They do push-ups on the rocks and they're adorable.
Did you know that every single person in Florida at night gets hit in the face with an iguana? Did you know that, everyone?
When they say hit me up on IG, the IG stands for iguana.
Anyway, we're going to move on to more on crime. I just like that photo of him holding that up. Like, how is that not everywhere on Twitter? Like, that's
it is. You know,
Ron DeSantis gives an update on his internal campaign polling. Ron DeSantis gives the results of tea leaf reading of his political future after this race. Like, it needs to be everywhere. It deserves to be everywhere. But let's jump into some facts on crime. We're going to end this section with this.
We're near 50-year lows, down 55% violent crimes in the state of California from the 1990s. And I want to compare and contrast that with the issue in Florida that you didn't mention, and that's the murder rate. He has a 66% higher gun death rate than the state of California. He has a higher murder rate. Go to places like Jacksonville. Go to places like Orlando. Go to places like Tampa. The murder rate's off the charts compared to cities like San Francisco.
Yeah, those are the facts. And neither Hannity nor DeSantis want to get into the facts. They like their narratives. The narrative is that blue cities, wink, wink, are more dangerous, even though when you look at gun mortality rates, red states dominate that list. And the safest places in terms of murder, gun deaths and all that tend to be blue states, not universally. It's a complex world. But simply saying, hey, I think San Francisco is dangerous is not as compelling to me as a person who lives in the reality-based world as actually talking about crime rates. And Florida has issues in that respect, as many southern states do. It isn't necessarily a political thing in every regard, but those are the facts. Sorry if you find that uncomfortable and you're in the MAGA movement. Right? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm. There is a higher murder rate in Florida than there is in California. Neat. Like, that's such a weird like thing from like to be like, yeah, suck it, Florida. But I
no,
just
no, it as a just a point, I think I agree is very weird.
Oh, yeah,
it is a response.
I'm just talking about what it feels like as like such a proud Californian, like born and raised, just to be like, yeah, people die here. It's pretty close when overall murder is brought into the equation. But he's like, you have a 66% higher gun death rate than we do. It's like, okay, yeah, we're basically killing each other at the same rate, but we use other stuff because we're more creative because of Hollywood. Like, what are we doing here? Like,
sure.
It's just so weird. And when Gavin Newsom, like, my position on criminal justice or, you know, justice system reform, whatever you want to call it, is it actually no one has tried it. Everybody, like the progressive DAs who got in to office just actually haven't done any real reform. They've just like played the wire game and just kind of changed the definition of certain things and prosecute people for certain things, which is a blunt instrument approach to a problem that requires anything, but no one is actually going in there and looking out for all victims and victims of that includes victims of crimes and also victims of a system that doesn't know what to do with people who are you know, victimized by it. And so no one's tried it. So when Gavin Newsom brings in like violent crime rates, it's like there's a lot of violent crimes here in California that just aren't classified as such. And that you can't, I mean, he brings it out because it's a stat. And that reminds you like the kind of thing that's happening in this largely masturbatory event that we watched on Fox News, which is like, oh, you pick a stat, you see if this guy looks cooler using it. And probably which your party affiliation determines that more than anything.
Yeah, I would just say that the overall point cannot be stressed often enough that despite Republicans saying if we get in charge and we let everyone have guns and all of that, you're going to be safe, doesn't play out. It never has. You can look at the places where they're in control. And I think that is an important thing to stress. But anyway, unfortunately, we are running a little bit long on this. So I just have to jump ahead of the response. There's great other videos that producer Mike cut, but we're going to jump to graphic two. So let's get ready on that. Ron DeSantis, I think fairly clearly, did not get out of this debate with Gavin Newsom what he wanted. He looks ridiculous, and he's going to look even worse after Donald Trump gets done with him. So the Trump team has put out a response to the debate, and it is inflammatory. The title of it is Kiss of Death, Ron DeSantis is Thirsty AF. which you guys are really, really old conservatives. Can you get it together on the slang? But anyway, Ron DeSanctimonious is acting more like a thirsty third-rate OnlyFans wannabe model than an actual presidential candidate. I love that they have rates for OnlyFans models, the Trump campaign. Like, they think one thing about third-rate OnlyFans models. What's a second-rate OnlyFans model? Anyway, maybe we'll find out. Instead of actually campaigning and trying to turn around his dismal poll numbers, DeSantis is now so desperate for attention that he's debating a grade-A loser like Gavin Newsom. And right there, Trump gives the win to Gavin Newsom because DeSantis is a third-rate OnlyFans model, whereas Gavin Newsom is a grade-A loser. That's the best grade. But they say at the debate, Ron will flail his arms and bobble his head widely, make it looking more like a San Francisco crackhead than the governor of Florida. This isn't a prediction. It's a spoiler. And spoiler alert, he turned out to be right. And it goes on and on. He's hitting him. This is before it actually went out. And yeah, largely he's right. He bobbled his head and he looked really bad. And he didn't do any favors to his campaign, I don't think. And if anybody is a winner coming out of this, other than maybe Gavin Newsom, I guess it's Nikki Haley. Brett, any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I don't think that any of the candidates that might eventually face Trump are going to do well enough. I don't think a lot of people's second choice, especially basically people who choose Nikki Haley first and Vivek Ramaswamy first, a lot of them, their second choice isn't Ron DeSantis or some other person on that stand. Their second choice is probably Donald Trump. It's just like the thing about Donald Trump they like more in its condensed version with this other alternative person. And I think they would probably, you know, Republicans do still fall in line. I think this is funny the way that he put out thirsty AF on the top of his of his response. It's so thirsty AF.
100%. Yeah. Okay. We're gonna keep watching. There's a lot about this campaign that gives me a lot of anxiety. But what is being done to Ron DeSantis gives me hope for the future. It's not hope for his future. But anyway, we're gonna take our second break. Lots more to get to, including we'll be talking more about Nikki Haley and the Republican side of this race after this. Okay, everybody, if you're just joining us now for the rest of the first hour, please hit the like button, share the stream. We're going to jump into more news.
I'm not a candidate. It only worked out for
this is my kids would say, that's my jam.
I love it. Great work, producer Mike. So Nikki Haley is up asking the voters to reject Donald Trump to pick her instead with a big ad. $10 million ad buy against Donald Trump in New Hampshire and Iowa. Let's see if it's going to get the job done for her. Take a look.
A president must have moral clarity and know the difference between good and evil. Today, China, Russia, and Iran are advancing. There's chaos in our streets and college campuses. Our security is threatened at home and abroad. It's time for a new generation of conservative leadership. We have to leave behind the chaos and drama of the past and strengthen our country, our pride, and our purpose. I'm Nikki Haley, and I approve this message.
Okay, so that's her first effort. She's spending $10 million on it. Much of that money apparently went to licensing the Terminator soundtrack for the backing of that. That was weird. But anyway, she says we have to leave behind the drama, leave behind the chaos. That is technically an attack against Donald Trump. You sort of have to read into it a little bit. I feel like you could mention a lot of other stuff if you really wanted to land a knockout blow, but that's what she's got right now. So, Brett, what do you think? Is this going to work for her?
What an old ad. Like, we got to leave behind the drama and the chaos of the recent past and go to the typical boring ass fear mongering of how our politics used to be, where the Republicans just scared the crap out of everybody and made them feel like they were less safe. So everybody would hunker around their guns and vote with a big R. That's what this ad is. I hate the mixed caps. Oh my God, the mixed like all cap, small cap. Like, geez. This like that. Oh God, I hate that. Oh, that font. Make every letter thick as the other letters. It's so annoying.
If she loses this thing, I think it's the typography that did. Oh,
it triggers me so much. It's like graphic design is her passion. But yeah, Nikki Haley. Did anyone else get vibes that it was like a satirical ad from Veep? Like it was just paint by numbers. It was so old, so tired. But conservatives, maybe they like that. They want to get back to like, you know, W. Bush 9/11 fear mongering imagery.
I mean, she is, I think, the avatar for that on the right now. And I will also say that before the show, I shared a couple of possible book covers with Brett, and I'm pretty sure I did that with the typography on the cover. So now I'm feeling very uncomfortable about my choices. But anyway, look, we're critical of the ad. That doesn't really matter. I think that the competition inside of the Pick Me primary is where it really matters. So let's jump to that. Chris Christie has responded to the ad. Here's what he had to say.
I saw a new TV ad today out from Governor Haley, and this is what she says. We have to leave behind the chaos and drama of the past. What? What's that mean exactly, Governor? Why not say it? He's not Voldemort from the Harry Potter books. He's not he who shall not be named. No. This is trying to have it both ways. She doesn't want to offend people who have supported Donald Trump. So she says things like in South Carolina 3 days ago, he was the right president at the right time. But for some reason, drama and chaos follow him wherever he goes, as if he is an innocent victim.
Okay, I think much of that criticism, I think, is 100% accurate. I love that there is at least someone in the Republican nominating contest who's saying that stuff. I will say it's not like Chris Christie is totally innocent because he stuck around with Trump for a long time. Maybe not as long, and he's more willing to be critical than Nikki Haley is right now. But he did stand literally by his side for some time. But that said, yeah, I think referencing Harry Potter is sort of a weird thing for a right-winger to do, although with her transphobic comments, maybe that has increased the value of her stock on the right. I don't know, Brett, what do you think?
I mean, parents know about Harry Potter, and that didn't even land until afterwards. He was like, say the name. They were like, what? I don't understand, until he said she's not saying Donald Trump. That is the benefit of being a trial lawyer right there. You are watching Chris Christie, who knows how to stand in front of a jury of 12 random people and make an argument that lands. That is, you know, how he made his name, essentially. I respect it. I think it was great. I think he is the only one who can stand up there with the kind of freedom of speech that Donald Trump stands up there with. That is how those two are similar. They're two people who are just like, I'm going to be strong in your face right now. And being able to call out, being able to differentiate yourself from the rest of the field is the job. It is the job. And that is the opposite of what everybody else on that dais is doing. Because they're afraid to alienate the Trump voter that they will end up needing. What they don't remember is like what you pointed out, like the memory is probably pretty short for these folks. Like they're just reacting in the moment because most people have other crap to worry about than memorizing what happened on every day. Most people don't remember that Chris Christie was next to Donald Trump all the time. And was part of his, led his transition team, essentially.
Phoenix Dragon is saying the Harry Potter comment was meant to be a nod to the millennials he had there. Okay, I had not noticed that it was overwhelmingly millennials. Perhaps that's the reason. Yeah, you might be right about people's memory. I think so many of his lines, should hit because he's still at like 2%. Like, I think they would be so much better off if they chose Chris Christie than sticking with Donald Trump. But so far, I think he's been super accurate with both his criticisms of the chaos of Donald Trump or the drama of Donald Trump, but also pointing out like his lies about the wall and the fact that he raised, you know, the national debt and like all the failures on policy. But it clearly isn't breaking through, no matter how much it might make sense to me as a person who has nothing to do with their side of the aisle, might think that it should. It isn't yet breaking through. So. Sorry, Chris Christie, but I appreciate it. Anyway, with that said, I want to move to another related topic. Let's jump now to President Biden, who is, I think, as predicted, attacking Donald Trump for his recent comments, saying that he wants to potentially get rid of the Affordable Care Act again, Let's take a look at that.
My name's Jody. I've been a pediatric nurse for 18 years. I love what I do, but we definitely need more support. The last administration's policies were so troubling, and our healthcare system has become a business, and people are becoming billionaires off the backs of sick people. I've seen the heartbreak when parents are trying to figure out how they're going to pay for a medicine to keep their kid healthy. But we are seeing lots of positive changes. And thanks to President Biden and Vice President Harris, families can afford medication now. The Biden administration lowered the cost of prescription drugs and passed laws to make healthcare more affordable. The idea that we could go back to the policies that help the rich get richer and left so many people behind. I don't want to go back. I can't go back.
And I think focusing on this issue makes a lot of sense for President Biden, both because the Democrats do have a big advantage when it comes to healthcare policy that has grown over time since the ACA was originally passed. It has steadily grown. And it's also a fair thing to stress in these ads because Donald Trump is now constantly talking about once again wanting to get rid of it. He, in response to some of these ads, which are running all over the place, he did truth. I don't want to terminate Obamacare. I want to replace it with much better healthcare. Obamacare sucks. Yeah, but again, as the woman demonstrating the ad, people know what came before that. And we also know what you and the right has when it comes to healthcare. You talked about doing like single payer healthcare in the 2016 race, and you were never serious about it. You were lying. They weakened the ACA to the extent that they could during Donald Trump's first term. They were not successful in completely destroying it, but like people are super worried about this because the stakes are incredibly high. They don't want to go back to the system that we had before. So yeah, if I was Joe Biden, this is exactly one of the major things that I would be focusing on. Brett, what do you think?
Yeah. People like healthcare. They like having access to it. They like the idea of more Americans having access to it as well. You know, if you point out that there are other countries that have cheaper healthcare, and we would have cheaper healthcare if we had a more accessible system like Medicare, which people love. The people who have it, they love it. And listen, Obamacare is itself just, you know, making sure that everybody plays in the capitalist pool. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to bring crisis, you know, prices down. But it itself is not the best system. If you want just like a purely government run system, or you want single payer, you're just not going to get that. It still prevents us from being able to, you know, kind of do the things that other countries do that bring down costs more effectively than our weird theoretical model that every capitalist can play nice with each other. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah, look, and they talked about a couple of the things that were done. Yes, there was some stuff done under Biden to lower the cost of some medications. You know, we gave details and criticisms as that was being done. Their difference on this issue feels to me like the entire campaign. It's like, so Biden is saying, if you let him in, he's going to get rid of this policy. If you keep me, I won't destroy it, and maybe I'll make it slightly better. And that feels like the entire campaign basically summarized in one policy distinction.
But for me, that is kind of how government is. That's the best I can expect government to do. Like that's good. And for even a conservative person, it's like, all right, make it slightly better. Mm-hmm. Like, don't overhaul the system. Don't get rid of everything. Make it slightly better. I feel like that should resonate more with Republicans, especially the older ones. Maybe they're just so old that they're on Medicare already, cool. So they don't care to learn.
I think the extent to which it resonates with them really depends on how you present the issue. If you tell them at large, Obamacare, then I think a lot of them will be like, no, that's bad. It's got the name Obama in it. Not as many are against it as the right might want you to believe, but a good amount are against it. If you actually dive into the specifics of it, no, nobody wants to go back to when you can be denied for the pre-existing conditions that virtually everyone in America has or is destined to have in the near future. So good luck on this issue, Donald Trump. Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show, everyone. Much more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. Brett and I'll be back after this. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.